You know, one of the interviews that I did at the beginning of the Derek Chauvin trial, the Chauvin trial was going to get the attention of the nation, right? And so we interviewed a man named Paul Violas that he's a law enforcement and security analyst for CBS News. And I got such a response from that interview from people saying that was just one man's experience and opinion based upon that. And they just, they loved the interview. They loved what Paul had to say, not in terms of what that prediction might, the result might be, but just in the fact that he broke it down. Well, here we are. The jury's in deliberation. We called him back. Mr. Violas is with us. Paul, good to have you back on News and Views.
Hey, good morning, Joe. Pleasure to join you.
What do you know now about this trial that might have changed your opinion or even made you more certain that Derek Chauvin will not be convicted of murder?
Well, let me tell you, Joel, and I'll go as quickly as possible, but to break this down so your listeners can get a really good view of this thing, the prosecution, remember, I come from the prosecution world. So the prosecution needed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the material elements or the facets of the crimes of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and manslaughter in the second degree were met. Unfortunately, what they did was they put most of their case on that emotional side, the video. Even the closing arguments, Joel, said, you know, follow what you see. But remember, it's not what we see. It's what they can prove beyond a reasonable doubt. What the defense did was they kept rebutting using two things. And the same things that we thought they were going to do, Joel, they did in fact do. One, they challenged whether or not Chauvin was responsible for the death of George Floyd. Now, interestingly enough, also, the judge, Judge Cahill, cautioned the jury before they went to deliberation. He said, and I quote, all charges require proof that the defendant caused the victim's death. What the defense did, if they did anything at all, they showed beyond a reasonable doubt, they created reasonable doubt that because of his drug use, because of his medical condition, using medical experts, that he may not have actually caused his death. They also put the state of Minnesota on trial, Joel, and they said, look, at the end of the day, the state of Minnesota permits a police officer to use the knee to the back of the neck. Even though most of us in law enforcement cringed when we saw it, the state of Minnesota allows it. So at the end of the day, what we found here when they closed arguments was that the defense created enough reasonable doubt for the jury not to convict on second-degree unintentional murder and third-degree murder, but did give them enough to second-degree manslaughter.
So when you say that, because I've been following it, maybe not as closely as you have, Paul, but certainly the prosecution made the argument and brought in experts that did say that it was suffocation, that did say that kneeling on his neck for over 9 minutes caused him to die. How does a jury weigh that? You know, how does a jury, you know, because it's one of the two. Can we agree on that?
Excellent question. Yes, Joel, you're absolutely right. And they did do that. And what surprised me was when the state brought in their defensive tactics, use of force expert from Los Angeles. I mean, what are you thinking? There is no correlation between police use of force in California and the state of Minnesota. Then they brought people that were their witnesses from the police department. But only one of those witnesses was actually a certified trainer. And on cross-examination, the defense came back to that guy and said, so would it have been possible in certain circumstances to do that? And he said, yes. That's all the jury needed to raise reasonable doubt. That's where I'm looking at here. I was disappointed. I felt the state was given more than enough information in order to get a conviction on all three. And I think they dropped the ball on me, too.
I want to go back to the comment you made about how the state of Minnesota allows that knee to the neck and how Minnesota was on trial as well. When you say that, you know, obviously law enforcement from Minnesota itself testified against Derek Chauvin, and they said they don't train, they don't teach, they don't use this. How does that play into your narrative of the state of Minnesota's on trial?
Exactly, Joel. You're right on point. Once again, what it does is it creates reasonable doubt. You have the defense that steps up and they say the state of Minnesota permits this use of force. And then they call the chief of police, they call a lieutenant, and they call a training lieutenant, three different people. All of them really, you know, come back and say, look, we don't train to do this. But on cross-examination, what the defense did was came back to those folks and said, but in the case of a riot, in the case of crowd control, and gave a number of different options, would it be possible for someone to actually do this? And they reluctantly agreed. They didn't come out and say they wanted to do it. They said we don't do it. They said we train against it. But they gave the jury enough reasonable doubt. So now while they're sitting around the table, remember, the judge said, you have got to come back with proof that he caused his death. And that is where I think this whole thing hinges. The medical experts, the battle of use of force, and the disparity between what the state of Minnesota allows as compared to what other states allow.
There was a request made by the defense to sequester the jury in light of what happened in Brooklyn Center. When that request was made, the judge rejected it. And of course, he instructed the jury as well to stay away from all media, just like they were before. But it does beg this question of you. Can that or will it weigh in on that jury deliberation when something 10 minutes away from that courthouse is brought to the nation's attention as well?
Short answer, Joel, yes. But there are three things that we learned during the scope of this trial that basically gave the defense the golden ticket. One, during voir dire, as we all remember, the city apologized for their employees' conduct 27 million times, right? They yep. came out and said, my guy was so bad, we're going to pay $27 million. That's why they were selecting the jury. Defense objected. Judge allowed it. They kicked one or two jurors at that time. They kept it going. Then, of course, you have the subsequent shooting. Didn't sequester the jury. Defense, tools for a mistrial, certainly for an appeal. But last but not least, you have Congresswoman Maxine Waters running her mouth about, you know, promoting more confrontation. And that even Cahill, who is known to be on the left side of the aisle, even Cahill said, I wish that she would just not say anything because clearly that's grounds for an appeal. So the defense is going into this thing with more cards than the prosecution, as much as it pains me to say that. And I'd be surprised if they get anything more than manslaughter.
Well, I was just about to ask you about Maxine Waters, because for the judge to bring that up, obviously not in front of the jury, but for the judge to bring that up and to point out that that potentially could be grounds for a mistrial. When I heard that, I understood it. I thought that what the congresswoman did was absolutely ridiculous, and she had no business being there and doing that. That being said, when the judge said that, it seemed to be an acknowledgement of the outside forces in media and what role they can play with the jurors, which immediately made my mind go back to Brooklyn Center, Paul. And so if the judge felt that strongly about a potential mistrial with Congresswoman Waters, then why wasn't the jury's ability to take in all the media after Brooklyn Center reason for a mistrial?
And that's really the question that's going to resonate at the end of this when the verdict comes out, Joel, because if they come back with a strong conviction, immediately the defense is going to move for a mistrial, and they're going to use that. They're going to use several things the judge did and did allow during the scope of this trial. And if they don't get the mistrial, and again, as much as it pains me to say this, Joel, they're going to win on appeal. So these are things, these were construct things during the scope of the trial that, and listen, I'm not a judge. I'm not nearly that smart. I don't want a Monday morning quarterback any judge. But, you know, based on my experience of over 40 years, I was really surprised that he allowed that.
Paul, how many people are tugging at you? Can I get just a little more time after the break?
Yes, sir. Absolutely, Joel.
Paul Violas, ladies and gentlemen, he works for CBS as a law enforcement and security analysis. 40 years of experience, that's what he brings to the table. Paul Vilas is a law enforcement and security analyst for CBS News, and he's anchor of the daily radio segment Security Matters with Paul Vilas. He is also CEO of the Vilas Group International, which he spoke in front of many different folks. I encourage you to take a look at his work and utilize him, because he's good at what he does in terms of bringing a subject into the conversation. Paul, I want to ask you this, because I think many people think they can read a jury. And you live in that world. Can you read a jury, and can you trust, if you're a prosecutor, if you're a defense attorney, can you trust yourself to know what that jury's thinking?
I believe you can, yes. The more experienced prosecutors, the more experienced trial lawyers do have the ability to read a jury. You know, you got to remember, so much about the way we communicate, Joel, is nonverbal. You know, so much is about an involuntary roll of the eye, or just someone looking uncomfortable, or facial expressions that come involuntarily when something is said or done, or a picture is shown, or whatever. I mean, so much of that is really watched during the course of the trial from where the jury sits. But the bigger part about this, Joel, that I have found is the demographic, the pedigree of the jury. And there are several people sitting on the jury that come from very cognitive-based thinking professions, science and math, people that are more fact-oriented, teacher, more fact-oriented. So those are the things that I think are really going to weigh heavily as they break down these material elements or components of these three crimes. And we got to remember, two things for all your listeners to remember is that they do not have to prove intent. The state did not have to prove he intended to do it. They do have to prove he caused the death. And that is where I think the demographic of the jury is going to come into play.
If I had 9 minutes and I played the full 9 minutes of someone kneeling on another man's neck, you know, that 9 minutes is going to be a long, excruciating 9 minutes, but it also would be an opportunity to get a reaction from the jury by watching them. What effect would having a 9-minute video show so that they can put it in actual context of what 9 minutes is?
That would be ingrained. It is ingrained inside the jury's mind. There is no doubt about it. The state did a phenomenal job at using the visual, at using the emotional, at using the fact that they played the clock and they put 9 minutes to work in the jury's mind. That's going to weigh heavy. The key here is, because look, think about this. Where I thought the state really could have done a better job here is to get the right use of force expert from the state of Minnesota that didn't have a horse in this race to stipulate something like, for example, I would have, you know, if I was testifying, that given the amount of officers, given the amount of resistance and the lack of resistance that the deceased showed, there was absolutely no reason that they couldn't have gained control, taken him off the ground, put him into the car. No reason. Absolutely no reason. But unfortunately, that's not what's being decided right now.
So when you look at that, the defense made that argument in reverse. You know, they tried to make the argument that the law enforcement officer, to control the situation, needed to be fearful of the crowd that had surrounded the arrest. And, you know, there are some who say that what the defense did was really show there wasn't a threat. There are others who say it was good strategy. It was a good strategy. I'd love your take on that, Paul.
I don't feel that the defense really gave me anything to walk away with feeling confident on their side of the argument at all when it came to crowd control. The part that they did, and I don't think they did this well, Joel. I think that they were lucky, is just on cross-examination, they got the Minnesota witnesses, the state's witnesses from the police department to question themselves while they were sitting on the stand about whether or not they would have done that, whether or not it was ever okay given crowd control. And they contradicted themselves. But clearly, the defense did not do a good job in presenting that, because at the end of the day, that was a really simple, very, very simple message to send to the jury. And that was, there were four police officers. There was one quasi-combatant defendant. And, you know, at the end of the day, if his health was so bad, four of you couldn't contain him, restrain him, and transport him. The key is not to prolong that if the crowd is gathering, Joel. The key is to contain and escape the area. That's what the key is. Don't sit there and let the crowd gather. So, no, I think they did a miserable job, and they just lucked out that the witnesses did even a worse job.
Last time I had you on, you weren't afraid to make a prediction of how you think the jury is going to respond. Now you have more information. Can you tell me now how you feel they're going to respond?
I think that they're going to convict on manslaughter. I do not think that they're going to convict on murder two or murder three. I do believe that the defense has already begun to plan their appeal, as well as motioning for a mistrial, which they're not going to get. They're not going to get the mistrial, but they will win on appeal. So I really believe that where we sit right now, as much as we want to say, Joel, listen, as God is my judge, I wish I could say this thing's going to be over this week or next, but it's not.
Okay. Paul, I really appreciate your time. You make for a great conversation, and you get people thinking. So I appreciate you coming on.
Joel, my pleasure. And one day we need to do it with both of us in the same studio.
I would love that. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Paul Violas, ladies and gentlemen, 40-some years of experience in the area that we just talked about.